Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces Podcast, episode 208. How are you guys? Thank you for tuning in. Great guest this week. I didn't want to mention it last week because I hadn't recorded it yet, and it was a touch and go if I could get any time with the gentleman. It's with Martin Freeman, who I'm a big fan of, and I put to him at the start of the interview that he is arguably the most successful British actor of all time, which some of you will be hearing that and scoffing or turning your nose up. Wait, just have a listen in that intro bit and tell me I've not got a decent argument there. I only could grab half an hour with Martin, but it was a great half hour, I think. As I've said before, I turned down an awful lot of press junkets because if they can't give me enough time, I don't think it works. In this instance, we were looking like we were going to be able to get 45 minutes, which is fine by me. I know I normally do 60 or 90, but 45 is a good time as well. And that at the last minute got cut down to 30, sadly. Again, testament to how busy the gentleman is, so I was excited to get any time. But yeah, I think it really worked. And you'll be pleased that it's only 30 minutes when you hear that next week is the return of the Drunk Cast, which is normally at least 3 hours up to, I think the longest was just over 5 hours. So there's plenty to come. And obviously last week was a double, about 3 hours worth with the Angles 10th anniversary special. Yeah, it was great to get to talk to Martin. If this is your first time tuning in, feel free to have a bit of a browse of the back catalogue. Previous guests include Simon Pegg, who after we'd finished recording, I was talking to Martin, and he was saying that Simon was the first, was the person who first played my music to Martin, or told Martin about me. So that was nice to know that Martin even knows who I am. It's always a pleasant surprise. So yeah, previous guests include Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. What other good British actors should I sling in the mentions there, or comedians as well? So people like Stuart Lee, Russell Brand, Paddy Considine, great actor Stephen Graham. On the female actors, obviously amazing people like Vicky McClure, Georgina Campbell, Florence Pugh, Kathy Burke is one of the best episodes we've done. Lena Headey. There's loads of amazing people in the back catalogue, so go and browse that. And you might be interested to know, a lot of people ask all the time about having people back, and I generally don't have repeat guests. I try and keep them one visit and that's it. But now we've broken 200, I'm considering having a few people from the first 100, let's say, back on. Partly because I had someone hit me up asking if Simon Pegg could come back on, and I emailed Simon immediately laughing at the fact that his people are emailing me and we're pals. So I'm going to have Simon back on, hopefully. I spoke to Russell Brand quite a bit a week or so ago, and he was saying he'd love to come back on. So yeah, so maybe have Simon back, maybe have Russell back. I might hit Riz Ahmed up. He was one of the early days guests that has been kind of busy since, so, and again, a good mate, so I think it'd be good to catch up with him. I should probably have Jim Smallman back on at some points, as since he's been on. His wrestling company have announced dates at Wembley. He's written a book on wrestling that's instantly become a bestseller on Amazon. Some good stuff going on with that boy, so, yeah. Some good people to come back on. I've also lined up some great guests. Again, I normally don't like to mention until I've recorded them, because that's always a tough one. But it's looking like after a long wait, I'm going to have Kate Nash on in the next month or so. Dan Skinner, the actor Dan Skinner slash and or the comedian Angelos Epithemou. We're recording that in a week or so. So that's going to be a crazy interesting one. Hopefully going to have Jamie Demetriou on, who I've heard on a load of other podcasts and watched on loads of other stuff, and he's great. Neil Gaiman, again, we've been saying for ages that we're going to sit down and have a chat. So that's looking closer. as is Benedict Wong, a fellow star of the Marvel Universe, along with today's guest, Martin Freeman. We talk about all of that. We get into it, me and Martin. We talk about his new film, Cargo, but we do talk about Marvel and The Office. Obviously, Tim from The Office is... The Office is one of the best... The love story between Tim and Dawn is one of the best bits of writing in British TV history, in my opinion, comedy or otherwise. So, yeah, we talk about that a little bit. We talk about The Hobbit a little bit. We talk about Sherlock a little bit. We get an amazing amount in half hour. Whenever I do these shorter ones, it makes me wonder if I should make all of them shorter, because we fit an hour's worth into half an hour here, so it's all killer, no filler. And Martin is, of course, in Cargo, which is on Netflix now. We talk about it a lot more in the podcast, but it's a zombie horror. I really enjoyed the take it had on the change to some of the more traditional tropes, I guess. We go into it in a lot more detail, but essentially the thing that I really enjoyed was, instead of being in a lot of the tension built up in darkness and confined spaces, it's built up in bright, open spaces, but in a really clever way, still giving that fear and the isolation kind of replacing the trapped element. It's good, man. I should mention, as ever, that we're brought to you by Speech Development Records, and we've got all of our summer that stuff out at the moment. So we've got just endless amounts of T-shirts and vests. Essentially, if you follow me on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, so at Scroobius Pipio on Instagram and Twitter, and facebook.com/ScroobiusPip. Or if you follow Speech Dev Rex on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, you'll see that we've just got an endless amount of T-shirts and vests and sunglasses and swimsuits and swimming trunks. We've gone all out again in the summer. So head over there and grab some stuff. There's also some Distraction Pieces merch at speechdevelopmentrecords.com, so it's a good way to support. Yeah, I'll jump into the podcast. I'll tell you more, because we're going to be doing a drunk cast. We're going to record it next, or as this comes out, we're recording it tonight, and then it'll be coming out the week after. But we're adding a fourth, a special guest. So I'll fill you in on all that at the end of the podcast. But for now, this is episode 208 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with the legend that is Martin Freeman. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. Nice and cool, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. It's good. It's a good thing.
And I asked if I want to turn the aircon off. I was like, no, this is lovely. This is nice. It's,
yeah.
No, we can. It's fine. It's a podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
It's nice to have it a bit.
It's a bit loose.
A bit loose.
Yeah.
Are you good to jump in?
Yeah, very good. Thank you.
Ready when you are. Okay, yep, go ahead. How's it all been going?
No, this is early days.
Early days.
You're the second person I've spoken to.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, this is easy then. I've got you at the start.
You got me at the awake. Yeah. Portion of the day, yeah.
Equally, you know, the questions I'm going to ask, you're going to polish perfectly by the end of the day, as everyone else has asked.
Yeah.
The middle point is the key, isn't it, I think, really?
I think this is not too long now.
Yeah.
The day's not too long, so I can sustain it almost by telling the truth. I can actually be honest.
It's amazing.
I'm not even having to act today. It's good.
It's the weirdest part on doing these, when we've got some mutual friends in Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Yes.
And when I had Simon on, I did it in his shed or his office thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most awkward thing, because you forget that as soon as you're actually recording,
mm-hmm.
it's actor Simon Pegg. So we had this big conversation,
right.
And then we ended. He said, I'm really sorry, I couldn't talk about anything at the end there, but here's what's actually happening with Star Wars or whatever.
Yeah,
else.
Yeah, of course.
Couldn't say any of that, but...
Yeah.
we'll give all the secrets.
It's the acting thing, though, isn't it? It's... Every podcast I do, I have at the end, so what's coming up? Mm-hmm. I don't generally ask that to...
Yeah.
Yeah, all good to go.
Well, certainly not of Simon, because everything Simon's involved with is hot, top secret.
Yeah, hot,
it's highly
hot topics
top secret.
And hidden away. Well, in the podcast fashion, I've began off the bat, and we're rolling. I'm joined by Martin Freeman. How are you today, sir?
Yeah, very good. Very good, thank you.
I was preparing for this. Are you someone I've wanted to have on for a while?
Thank you.
And when I was preparing... I felt I had to open in a specific way, which might make you a little bit uncomfortable, but it wasn't until I was preparing. That's the goal, isn't it?
Please God.
Press day.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I was preparing that I think there's a legitimate argument for you to be one of the most successful British actors of all time.
Great, I like this already.
It's lovely, right?
Why would that make me feel uncomfortable?
Just
I feel great.
Starting with The Office being, you know, one of the most beloved and biggest things, but then I'm a big Marvel fan, and Black Panther is one of the biggest films of the year. Mm-hmm. Your Watson in Sherlock Holmes, Fargo was fantastic. And then, to be blunt, your Bilbo fucking Baggins, which...
Yeah, true, yeah.
It's kind of, it's a hell of a run, right?
I can't deny it. Yeah, I know. I think for everybody in their own lives, especially, you know, even if you're... And I know I'm successful.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky to be... But, of course, you don't see... You know, because you don't live your life... We don't live our lives with those kind of banner... headlines
of course, of course.
So when those banner headlines are sort of presented to you,
yeah,
you do kind of go, wow, yeah, that's quite impressive.
It's like bad, isn't it?
That's quite good, yeah. But because I don't often think about that stuff, but yeah, put like that, yeah, I'll happily take it.
But one of the strange things of this industry is you go from gig to gig to gig, and you're someone who's worked a lot. One of the things I like is the balance of smaller and independent films like Ghost Stories and Cargo, which we're here to speak about. But the beauty of that industry is you'll put all this time into something and then before it's out, you're working on the next thing. So I think it is a way of stopping you at points from taking a look back and taking it all in.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, maybe.
Because you're already excited about the next thing. It's not, how great that was.
No, absolutely.
What's going on next?
Well, I think it's a mixture of that, as you say, just the logistics of that, because your life, again, if you're lucky enough to be successful, your life doesn't allow you to sit on your laurels very much and kind of look back and go, oh my God, wasn't this a great thing? Because you are just moving forward. But also, I think it's just your own personality, you know. And I'm not particularly built that way, I guess. Yeah. Or I'm not particularly, I think I have a real strong cynicism and lack of, I don't know, just a lack of willingness to kind of go, yeah, I'm great, aren't I? Do you know what I mean? And because you just want to keep your head down and do work. And that's not to say, oh, I think I'm terrible. But I don't know, it's just, it's uncomfortable for me to take it too much. You know what I mean? Yeah. To take too many plaudits. Because it sort of becomes, A, embarrassing, and but it does not feel... real sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does, and listen, I'm a big believer in taking a compliment. If someone compliments you, you should take it.
Sure.
For you and them, you know, because it's taken something from them to come and say, oh, I think you're really good, so you should be gracious about it. But at the same time, I think you've always got to, for me, I always put 30% of that out of my head immediately. Do you know what I mean? Because in a good day, in the course of a good day, a lot of people might say a lot of really nice things to you.
Yeah.
If you retained all of that and if you believed all of it, you'd be mental by the end of the week.
Completely.
Because you would start to make your own cult.
And I think that's key. I think that's key as well, because it allows you to also brush off any negative comments. And when you're in the public eye, you're always going to have the positive and the negative. So I feel...
But probably like every person you've ever met, maybe yourself included... good Lord, if only negative comments were as...
They hit through harder.
Sorry, I just spat at you. No, and that wasn't a comment on you. I wasn't spitting at you as a violent act. But if only negative comments were as easy to brush off as the good ones. But every actor you've ever met will say the thing that... You know, I can remember verbatim a couple of doozies that I've had said about me.
Yeah.
That my ego or my good Catholic upbringing wouldn't allow me to remember fantastic things that people had said about me, you know, verbatim. But the shit,
And it's, again, it's one of them. It's not that we should just ignore all positive and negative, because both of them can help us grow.
Yeah, they're both instructive,
As creators. But, again, you're completely right. Taking either of them too much can destroy you.
Yes, it can. I don't think... I think they are both instructive. And I think it's you know, again, if you're going to believe in heaven, you've got to believe in the other thing.
Yeah,
and if you're going to take the good stuff, you have to take the... You know, not horrible stuff. You know, like if someone just says something horrible about you, that says far more about them. But if someone has a critique of you that is something you would rather not hear, it might be instructive. Because some of it might be true. It might be true.
Yeah. So does that play into your role selection? Because one of the things I like, as I said, I mean, Cargo, I absolutely adored it, and we'll get into it more because I think it's a great take.
Thank you.
On a genre that's had a lot of of takes, and weirdly, you were, you know, you snuck in of the first, in Shaun of the Dead, one of the first kind of reimaginings of zombies films in a while. You kind of popped up there. So it must be nice to come back round and go, let's have a go at this.
Let's have a go.
I've got to peep in on that,
different
a wave
flavor,
kind
of
thing.
Yeah.
So does that influence your choices and selection in films? Because to be in, again, the three, just looking at it now, Black Panther is one of the biggest films of all time opening, and you had a huge part in that. Ghost Stories is critically acclaimed and wonderful, a great adaptation from a wonderful play. Mm-hmm. And Cargo is another one. Again, it's on Netflix, which is this new world of cinema going straight into our living rooms. Mm-hmm. So it must play in there that you're like, no, I'm looking for the right roles and the right things rather than, well, I've done this big blockbuster, the next thing has to be blockbuster. I mean,
Definitely.
Lord of the Rings, Black... Like, you could... everything in between Lord of the Rings and Black Panther could be skipped because they're these huge franchises.
No, absolutely. I've really tried to... I've tried always to be honest in my... To do things where, as far as possible, that reflect your taste, your own taste.
Yeah.
So I try not to do things that I don't like.
Yeah.
I try not to do things that I don't genuinely respect. And again, all of this I realise is from a very lucky point of view that I have choice, you know.
100%,
and you know, but I do think once you have choice, why not use it wisely, and why not use it discerningly? Because I've always had a very strong image of me on my deathbed, looking back and going, "Did you sell out? Did you?" And by sell out, I just mean, did you just take easy paths for the sake of size, or you know, like just because you think this would be a big thing, because bigger isn't always better, obviously. No. Yeah. Obviously. Some big things are fantastic, but, you know, a lot of the things that we respond to as people, I think, are a bit smaller or are a bit off the beaten track. They just completely. Are for everybody, you know. Or for everybody who's interesting, who I've ever met.
Yeah.
They're not only listening to the top 10 and they think, oh, the top 10 records are just the best records ever. No, they're not.
Yeah.
The albums that really, really mean a lot to you will be slightly over there or slightly over there. You know, completely. Some of them will be top 10, but, you know, it won't all be. And so that reflects my taste. I love big films if I love them.
Yeah.
And I love small films. You know, some small films, some small indies are awful, as are some big tentpole films.
Exactly.
You know? But some of them are good.
And that's where people can go either way on that, can think all mainstream stuff is shit or
rubbish.
It's indie. It's not. It's there's awful. Good and bad everywhere.
And the older I get, I feel it more... Especially politically, actually, all the interesting stuff is in the grey in between stuff.
Yeah.
It's very easy to kind of make everything a declarative sort of statement.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Oh, I'm into this kind of thing. It's like when people go, I hate all musicals. Do you?
Yeah.
Really? Have you heard West Side Story? You prick. I mean, like, you know, some of them are like the greatest art in the world. You know, just because some of it's not to your taste or some of it's shit, it doesn't mean everything is. You know, and the idea that. Oh, I don't, you know, mainstream movies are awful. Of course they're not. Some of them are amazing.
It's the overwhelming desire now to have a tribalism, to jump into, I'm into indie films.
Of course.
I don't, I remember when I was working in DVD stores and video stores that people were like, oh, I love black and white films. It's like,
all of them.
You love the lack of colour in them. Is that what's driving you to? No, there's just, there happens to be something in that era that might draw
course,
you to them.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be that pure aesthetic. Yes. There should be more there.
Absolutely. Well, I come from, you know, I come from a part of my life is the mod thing, right?
Yeah.
And the amount of people in that scene who sort of say, oh, no, best film ever is Blow Up. I think it's not. It's not. Yeah. It's not better than The Godfather. It's just fucking not. You know, there are things about that to us as dodgy old mods will definitely appeal. Yeah. David Hemmings in white jeans, of course, is going to be fucking great.
Great.
You know, great soundtrack, blah, all of that.
Yeah.
But it's the thing of adding up whether something is cool compared to whether something actually hits you where you live, right in the sternum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I would go for the sternum every time.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's cool or not, I don't care. I like cool stuff as well, you know,
and
if you can combine them, brilliant.
Yeah.
But, I just think I'm trying to be more honest with myself about stuff I really, really like and stuff I really, really don't like.
Yeah. And that approach must help your sanity in many ways, because when you commit to a film or TV show, it's a long-term commitment. Mm. But as an actor, mm-hmm. a lot of it is then taken out of your control. Indeed. A lot of it is then in the edit, in everything else. So if you're going into projects because of your heart, then mm-hmm. if it ends up good or bad, mm-hmm. you know you were there for the right reason. Whereas exactly. if you've gone in for maybe a financial yeah. or a profile thing,
yeah.
if it's shit, you kind of know deep down it's not very good and you've done it yeah. not for the right reasons.
I've been in that situation, happily not many times.
Yeah.
But, I mean, actually, I had a night with Andy Nyman, actually, around at his house, where we showed each other not very good films that we'd made.
Yeah.
And naming no names. And and the one that I showed him of mine was a film that about a week in, I thought, yeah, I've only got myself to blame. Yes. Yeah. Because I did it out of expediency or something, or it was a bit of money before Christmas or something. You know, it was just, it was, but I knew it wasn't, and again, most scripts you get are not Citizen Kane, clearly.
Yeah.
But you can still have your own take on, okay, do I think this is have got real worth in its best possible life? Could this be a really good film? And that's what you try to do. That's what I try to do. And with that one, it was like, it'll be okay. And so about a week in, I thought, Martin, you've only got yourself to blame. You know, so I thought, do not put yourself in that situation again until you have 8 children and need to feed them.
But that's it. There's a luck element there as well, right? I did a film at the end of last year, and again, it was a similar thing where I thought, the script's all right, but I've got some time before Christmas. Mm-hmm. It'll be good experience. I'm brand new to acting. This is good experience. And then when I got there, it was far better than I was expecting. Right. So I had the exact opposite. I was kind of... Oh, I could have fallen on my arse here. But again, it kind of was a similar thing where I was like, right, I can't do that again because I've got out of that alive. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That's worked out okay. If I keep going off that approach, then it's going to end badly.
I think where the danger of that is, I think for all of us, is that you can end up, and again, it's only a danger if you think it's a danger. If it's fine that you make 3 films every 10 years, fine. Yeah. In the hope that they're all going to be Apocalypse Now, great. Yeah. But you need some bread to do that. You know what I mean? Because you need to live. And also, I like the work. I like acting.
Yeah.
So, of course, not everything I do and have done and will do is going to be the dramatic or comedic equivalent of Sergeant Pepper.
Yeah.
Of course, they're not.
No.
But if they're, if they're at least good, I'll take that.
That's
what you want to strive
for. Exactly. Right?
But I think if you get too precious and too wound up with it, it has to be amazing. You won't do anything.
Yeah.
You won't do anything. And for you, you won't do any more acting.
Yeah.
But if it's something that you want to get better at as a craft, of course you're not going to start at Sergeant Pepper. Of course you're not.
Yeah.
You know, you do have to get your hours in. You really do. I still feel that. And I've been doing it 20 plus years. And I still feel that I want to get better. I feel I do get better because I'm lucky enough to do it a lot.
Mm.
So I think I look back on some things that I think I was good in that, but I look at it and think I think I'm better now.
Yeah.
I think I know more stuff now.
Yeah.
Or I rely on less things than I did completely. 12 years ago, 15 years ago.
And a lot of that then comes down to timing of the right role and at the right time as
totally,
well.
Yeah, totally.
And Cargo feels like a great example of that because it's an action and a horror and there's probably a lot of action or horrors that you may have read the script for. I'm not the lead in this action or horror, but in this, it sits perfectly.
Yeah.
What I really liked about it was subverting the traditions of the genre. Is it being most of the tension taking place in daylight and in open spaces rather than in darkness and confined spaces, which is a really nice flip. And there was a film called Awake in Fright I was a big fan of, which all took place in Australia as well. And again, it was that fear of the openness, but the isolation that comes from that. And that's what really came out in this was the fear that, there's tons of space and you can probably see things coming, but you may never find anyone to help you, anywhere to hide, anything to do about it, which is scarier in many ways.
It is. Well, that tons of
to
space...
To see it come in and not be able to do anything about it.
Exactly. Well, all that space means you've just got a hell of a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah.
Carrying a baby and looking after an 11-year-old girl, and she's sort of looking after you as well.
Yeah.
And I look at that film now and think, oh, yeah, they could really easily have run out of water any time and they could have just died of starvation,
At any point.
It's scary because there's no one around.
Yeah.
So when you do meet someone, and it transpires that person is really the wrong person who sort of purports to help us, he's not a good guy who does that, but it's a person. You know, it's not the undead. Yeah. So you've got to go for the person, even if they're a twat, you know.
And that's what was quite nice as well, because, again, without giving any spoilers, there is a real blurred line of mm-hmm. of who or what the enemy is. Is the enemy running out of water? Is the enemy another human that's alive that wants to do what they can to stay alive, forget everyone else? Is the enemy zombies or the equivalent?
Yeah.
Is, you know, there's so much in there, and it was nice that it looked at the reaction of the native, the Aborigine tribes people, how they reacted to a zombie type virus, and how the kind of often white, you know, more modern Australians are reacted, and so on and so forth. Yeah. And you as a Brit kind of travelling out.
Yeah, there. So I'm foreign to all of that. Yeah. So I would have been married for a few years, gone to Australia, had a little baby. And then this shit hits
then
the fan.
Then all hell breaks loose.
And again, because it's never really specified, again, without giving away too much, never really specified the specific causes, how long it's been going on, whether it's worldwide or is it contained in Australia. You think, well, please God, this isn't all over the world because it's horrible. But you don't quite know how pandemic it is.
And I love that about the writing, because I think there's a real confidence in not having to explain everything. I think that can be a problem for sometimes. Yeah. Here's exactly what this is like.
Yes.
There's some stuff like, look, this is just the situation we're
in.
Just deal with it. Yeah. We've not got time to say, exactly, here's how it happened, and then this spread to that. It's like, origin story isn't always the most important part of a story.
No, indeed, no. No, I think sometimes it's just like where the audience, the audience come in, to cargo, me and my wife and my baby are on a boat looking for any signs of life. That's all you need. So that's where you enter, and that's kind of all you need to know. Yeah. I think knowing more than that is of interest to people, and, someone else will, stretch that out at some point, either in fan fiction or something else, a novel will be made of it.
But
just for the film experience, it's just that hour and a half of, okay, here's what it is.
Yeah.
And you don't know the wider thing, and because also maybe those characters don't know the wider thing, they're just living in this tunnel vision, and so that's what you as the audience might get,
again. It's beautiful to make it relatable even though it's unrelatable, if that makes sense.
Of course, if
you're in as much in the dark as they are, it instantly puts you there as a I don't know what's going on as I'm watching, therefore.
Well, I think that was part of my attraction. Well, my attraction to this film was a screenplay that I felt was a different take on a zombie thing. I never felt, I must make a zombie film.
Yeah.
I never felt that. Yeah. I didn't, in all honesty, I didn't really feel the world needed more zombie films at that point. Ben and Yolanda, the directors, and Yolanda wrote the screenplay as well. They like zombie stuff, and they like it more than, I don't dislike it, but I'm not a fan of it.
Sure.
But what I responded to was the human stuff, a father trying to do his best for his family.
Yeah.
That was all I sort of needed to know.
Yeah.
And it's written well, and you get to do kind of fun, exciting, dramatic stuff, and the indigenous side of it, as you say, well, that was another quite a bit of a different take as well.
And a beautiful one, because again, so much of where stories or themes get a bit overplayed or played out is when it is, here's another zombie film in England or America,
in cities,
these familiar places. Whereas if something like that did break out, the interest is how all these other parts of the world would react and adapt to that.
True.
So I love that. So
You're right.
One of the things I love about this industry is people often ask, "Oh, what role would you like to play?" Mm-hmm. And the reality is, most of those roles are ones you've never heard of yet.
Absolutely.
A script just comes across your desk. You're like, "Wow, that's now all I want to do." So the long time of seeing the script and working on this horror, it's how genuinely frustrating or how much did it enter your mind that as someone who was brought to our eyes, or many people's eyes, as Tim from The Office, a wonderful role, again, I think one of the best relationships played out in British TV history, regardless of comedy.
Thank you, and I would agree.
So how frustrating is it then that someone who's brought to us as Tim from The Office releases a concept driven, intelligent, genuinely scary horror, and at the same time, Jim from The Office, your American equivalent, releases a critically acclaimed horror, high concept kind of thing.
Funny, wasn't it? Yeah.
Has there been any kind of thought or annoyance on that? It's like, that's
annoyance.
I've been working on that for ages.
there's no annoyance at all. But it was, yes, it was interesting timing because I mean, that happened specifically, I think, more with when Ghost Stories happened.
Right, yeah, sure.
I think even before Cargo, because Ghost Stories and Cargo came, you know, quite close together.
Yeah.
But Ghost Stories was first and...
And was in the cinema at the same
time. Yeah, yeah. It was kind of weird. But no, there was no anger about it. Yeah. No. But it was funny. Sometimes those things do just have parallels. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, me and Ben going into the Marvel universe at a similar time. You know what I mean? It's like, so from the outside, it kind of looks like, okay, well, that was either a plan or they're messing with us or they haven't. It's like, no, it's far more arbitrary than that. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's why I don't really, for the most part, believe in. Conspiracy theories, because I think no, most of it is just life. It's people scrabbling around, trying to do their best. Yeah, and in our case, it's try. You know, people are making a living.
Yeah.
Films get made after years and years.
Yeah,
you know,
that's it. It's the lack of
John Krasinski wouldn't have just gone one week. I've had this idea, and then the next week he's making it. You know, this takes months and years of planning. And then when it comes out, that's just when it comes out. That's when the planes are landing. But they've been in the air. Or in preparation, tinkering away for, you know, sometimes decades.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's the thing. It's the illusion of the lack of knowledge of how long these things are happening.
Of course,
I always remember when Dread came out, Dread 3D. I thought it was a great take on the Marvel film, but it was all set in a tower block and The Raid had just come out. And all the reviews were like, it's like The Raid. It's like, they've both worked separately years and years
on really
this.
It's really cruel,
and by chance,
it's a cruel twist of fate.
At the same time.
Absolutely,
so, I mean, aside, a lot of us... knew you in Ali G as Ricky C as well. Mm-hmm. Bizarrely, I was particularly a fan of that because my best friend at the time was called Ricky C. So I was like,
"Oh, really?
It's Ricky. That's exciting." Right, but
I still get there's still a lot of teenage boys who love that. I mean, teenage boys now, you know, who would have been about one when that came out. But that still pushes buttons for
it's an amazing one.
Young men of a certain age. Yeah,
but still, it was the role of Tim in The Office that kind of. That brought you really onto everyone's radar. Mm-hmm. And I want to kind of talk about the juxtaposition of that because it was a role that you would have presumably gone into with zero expectation because no one knew that was going to be huge.
Absolutely,
and so you're just taking on this character. I really enjoyed all the kind of the Laurel and Hardy kind of type references in there and the physical comedy thrown in. So it's not just a, here's a wacky a sitcom. How was it to take on a role like that and then... it become this huge thing, and even looking back, do you look back and still see what it was when you were making it, or what it's become and done to your career? I guess.
Well, I'll tell you a confession. Last night, I watched the Christmas special.
Yeah,
because with my dinner.
Yeah,
and that sounds like a very egotistical thing. Just, I'm just going to watch myself, but it wasn't just that. I was watching a show that I loved. You know, that also happened to have some very good memories for me of making it. Yes, I had no. There was nothing at stake for any of us.
Yeah,
when we were making it, because none of us were really famous. The show kind of went out, a weird time on BBC Two. The first time it was aired, some people thought it was a documentary. You know, and that's a great compliment. You know, some people mistook it for a documentary because none of us were stars. All I can say is what I say about a lot of the things that I've been lucky enough to be in that have been successful. Whether or not it had been massively successful, I knew we liked it. You know,
it was my taste,
and we thought it was good.
Yeah.
So if 20 people had agreed, or if 2 million people agreed, I know my opinion of the thing would have been the same.
Yeah.
Of course, it's much nicer when 2 million people agree.
Yeah. You
know, no one doesn't like being in a hit.
Yeah. I mean,
nobody
exactly.
doesn't like that. And it was, you know, one of the funnest times of my life, without question.
Yeah.
I mean, I was laughing most of the time. From the morning till the evening, every day of that show. Yeah.
So how does that compare then when stepping into something like The Hobbit and Bilbo Baggins? that's The Hobbit is as big as it gets, and Bilbo is as big as it gets, and that where there is going to be huge expectation.
Yes.
And again, it did turn out to be loved and adored and a success. And
but it was a train that was already running. Yeah,
yeah.
It was. You have to get on a moving train because, like, the Lord of the Rings had already happened, and it was they were as big as they can be.
And the scary part is you're getting onto a moving train as the conductor, because still, as big as the Lord of the Rings books were, The Hobbit was the biggest of the books running, and Bilbo was the most known. That's the story that most... So there was that pressure of, oh, this train already works, and now they want me to drive it and engineer it.
Well, yeah.
If it crashes now, I'm going to get the blame for that.
No, I mean, thank God, I was never under the illusion that I was driving it, fortunately. Yeah. I was a sort of a very favoured guest in the first-class compartment of the train.
Yeah,
but the driver was definitely Peter. One thing I think I'm quite good at is not taking on undue pressure.
Yeah.
And I think I'm quite good at ignoring it. And that's part of the thing we were talking about earlier, about only taking in so much of all the external things.
Yeah.
You know, because so when people... And, you know, I'm fortunate. I have a lot of people saying a lot of nice things about me on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Part of, I think, the same instinct that makes me shelve some of that and just like not take it all in to make myself Mussolini is the same instinct that makes me not terrified about doing acting, because acting's fun, you know. So all the time I was doing Bilbo, I never thought I could really be fucking this up, you know, because Ian Holm has already established it and there's always all this pressure about. I never ever, honest to God, once thought that. It just it never crossed my mind, because I thought, well, I'm quite a good actor. This is quite a good film. I think we can do this, you know. And we have a right to do it, and I have a right to do my go.
Yeah.
It will not be to everyone's taste. Of course it won't be. So that's not going to stop me from trying. You know? So I never thought on set or before or after I could really be messing this. I really didn't.
Yeah.
Because I knew also, like I said, I wasn't the driver. You know, I mean, like, if there was one star of those films, it was Peter Jackson. It wasn't me. You know?
But so I'll wrap things up now, as I've taken up plenty of your time. So how rewarding is it then when those ones that you are just going and enjoying and hoping for the best of such, things like The Hobbit and Sherlock as well, another one that had a great amount of pressure on, because it's Sherlock Holmes. And this iteration of it, I think, has been the most... critically acclaimed and well received and nailed. So how is it when those kind of things go, right, well, we are just all here doing our best and enjoying ourselves and hoping for the best. How is it when they kind of, they come off and you get to go, wow, this is a good job?
It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, because with all the things that I've done that have been, not all the things I've done have been, but of the things I've done that have been critically acclaimed and that you get a lot of, you know, good feedback for, when you give it out to the public, of course, you know, I've enjoyed doing all of them.
Yeah.
So from, if they'd never been released, I would have gone home thinking, well, at least it was fun doing it. Once they're released and it's completely in the lap of the gods, whether the public will respond to it or not, when things really take off, like Sherlock, I mean, Sherlock is a prime example of that. And it's a sort of phenomenon the like of which I've not seen in any of my other work, actually. Not in any, I mean, maybe Black Panther now, but I'm so not the centre of Black Panther. You know, I'm definitely not the most interesting thing about Black Panther. You know, like, but I was definitely one of the most interesting things about Sherlock.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So being it kind of in the full sort of whirlwind of that is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. Because you know that you would do it even if 20 people watched it, because you like the writing and you like the cinematography and you like the composing and you like working with Ben. It's all of that stuff you would do regardless. Yeah. So when other people agree to the extent that they agree, again, it's like everyone loves a hit, man. Yeah. You know, especially if you in your head, if you are probably just an indie band, you know, if you're not a winner of the X Factor, but you're just in a band in a garage somewhere, and then all of a sudden 5 million people want to buy your album. That's fucking amazing.
And
yeah.
And that's the beauty of it all then, right? The kind of jokes on them. I would have been doing this anyway. I would have been doing this for free. This is
it's
beautiful.
It's a job that I have done for, and I will do again for free. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Discretion Pieces.
There we go. That was episode 208 with Martin Freeman. I told you we fit a lot in, didn't I? Ye gods. Yeah, that was, mate, it was amazing to get to talk to Martin. I think he's fantastic. I'm a big fan. If any of it has sounded like I was kissing arse, that there is an arse worthy of all the kisses I gave out, if that is your view. What a lovely dude. Couldn't have been nicer. Gave me as much, again, as I said, although it got cut short, he gave me as much time as he could, and that was lovely. It, after me was something like, oh, there was a whole room full of people who basically had 5 minutes each. Come in, sit down, talk, leave. Come in, sit down, talk, leave. So it means a lot to get these hits in, so it's appreciated.
And of course, as said, Cargo is on Netflix right now. I recommend it. It's great. I really enjoyed it as a fresh look on a not particularly fresh genre, I guess. I mean, it's a genre about rotting dead bodies, so that's not very fresh at all. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. Check it out. And also, check out Ghost Stories if you get a chance. We didn't get a chance to talk about it in much here. Or maybe I'll try and get Andy Nyman on around the DVD release. He was meant to come on around the cinema release, and I was just had so many guests, so it didn't work out. But I'll get him on. Yeah, it's really good fun. I think it might be in some cinema still, but surely it's going to be on demand and on DVDs soon. So yeah, check Ghost Stories out as well. A really interesting and genuinely, like, I've never jumped, or I've not jumped so much in the cinema in a long time. It's a clever little story that weaves three different kind of ghost investigations together, three maybe four, and yeah, I really enjoyed it. So, and Martin's in that as well, in case I haven't made that clear. What else? Well, I've got a stutter, if you're new to the podcast. You would have noticed by now. Yeah, I was going to mention, we're doing the Drunk Cast. So Chris and Stu, obviously returning. Chris and Stu of Hardcore Listening fame. We're going to record it at Speech of Elements Studios, Distraction Pieces Studios, instead of the Whiffin, because we did the last couple in my studio and it was lovely. And we are adding someone. He's new to the Distraction Pieces podcast. If you're a fan of Hardcore Listening, he's a familiar face from the live ones and from a couple of episodes, I think, just online, or at least some Patreon ones as well. It's Big Papa Jay, Justin. I listened to him on Hardcore Listening and he cracked me up. He's been a mate of Stu's for years. I've known of him. I've never particularly met him until recently. And he cracked me up on them podcasts. He was hilarious. And then for Stu's, how old's Stu? 45? For whatever birthday he had recently, Stu and his missus, Justin and his lovely missus Antonia. I mean, yeah, there was another couple, Mark, and I've forgotten everyone's names, but I'm doing this on the spot. I'm so sorry. That's very rude of me. And me and Chris went as a couple. We all had a little weekend away in a little barn, and it was lovely. We did an escape room, which we absolutely smashed. Or the team that me and Chris were on, not the other team. But I'm sure we'll talk about that on the Drunk Cast. But yeah, we had a great time, and Justin cracked me up and has got stories for days. And yeah, I demanded at that point that he come on. Now, he's either going to be Chris's stunt drinker or part of Chris's punishment, because Chris, on the end of year Hardcore Listening, declared he was only going to drink six times this year, and if he failed, he had to shave his head. So I've not checked in with him, but if he's over the six times, if he's under the six times, then he'll come and he won't drink, and Justin will drink, and that'll be fine. If he's over the six times, then we're thinking we're going to shave his head live on Facebook before the podcast starts. Yeah, so that's the plan. It's going to be great. Tune in next week for that. It will be in as many parts as it needs to be. I'll spread it out over a few days or whatever works. But yeah, good things to come there. If you'd like to sling some questions or anything, hit any of us up on social media and prep some Drunk Cast topics or discussions or things you'd like to hear. We've not really done that before, an audience questions type bit, but let's give it a go. That's everything. Thank you for tuning in. Apologies again for this one being a little short, but I think you'll agree the quality is there. So it was lovely. Martin, in fact, is someone I guess I'd welcome on another time, even though he wasn't in the first 100, purely because it'd be nice to get a bit more time to go into stuff. But again, no, I don't think we needed to, man. I think we covered it. I think we had good chats. I don't think I interrupted him too much. Sometimes, if you're new to this podcast, some people feel I talk too much on the podcast, but I explain that I'm not a journalist. I have conversations, and I'm always less than 50% of the speaking, always.
It may not seem like that because you're used to someone being interviewed and it being 90% them and 10% the interviewer. But honestly, I'm always under 50%, but every now and then I'll creep up to 40% or 45%, but not any further. And it's generally because I'm excited and we're having a conversation. That's how conversations work. So yeah, if you're new and you hated it, I apologise. Probably don't go back and listen to any of the others. It'll infuriate you. But hopefully you did enjoy it, and I'll be back next week with some absolute messy conversations. See, that's the worst ending to a podcast ever. I messed up just a word, a sentence. I lost my track. That, ladies and gentlemen, is why we are approaching 12 million downloads of the Distraction Pieces podcast. As a network, we are over 13 million downloads, approaching 14 million. We're adding a new podcast. This is the longest ending ever. Well, we're adding a new podcast to the network soon. Stu, a whiffing of hardcore listening, is doing a little audio docu-series type thing. That's really cool. It's essentially biographies in a playlist, I'd describe it as. He sits down, he's doing it as location-based. So the first series is going to be, I think, 7 episodes of people from Essex and kind of going through 7 songs that mean certain points at certain points in their life. So you get kind of a biography, an autobiography in or biography, I don't know, either way, in playlist form. And then the playlist will be on Spotify and all that. It's called Off the Beat and Track. He's got all the social media set up for it already, to go and get liking and be ready for that to drop. But anyway, I'm rambling. This is the end of the podcast. Thank you for tuning in. I'll be back next week. Peace. That's a reference to the ending of I Get Wrecked by KRS-One and Tim Dog. Peace.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.